Thank you for listening to this talk given at the Center for Spiritual Living, Midtown, Atlanta.
I want you to walk out of here with a one-liner today. If there is a chasm, jump. The distance is not as far as you think it is. If there's a chasm, jump. The distance is not as far as you think it is. And what I'm talking about with a chasm is that when you're in this certain area of your life and there's a place where you want to be in life, but it seems like a very long jump for you to get to that next place in life, some of us turn around and don't take the jump. So what we want to walk around, out with this morning is that if you see a chasm, jump. Mainly because I just want to share with you that there's many times in our lives where we do see that chasm and we're like, oh, I can't do that. I don't have the right degree. I don't have the right age. I don't have the right this or that or something like that. And I just want you to sit here and say, whenever you come up with that distance, go ahead and jump. So that's my talk for today. I'm glad you came. And but mainly I've been studying all summer long because Marilyn's doing the same thing. She's studying for her class. I'm studying for my class. I am doing the Joseph Campbell Power of Myth class, and I'm really excited about it. But it's not just the power of myth of stories that happened thousands of years ago and societies are recreating or anything like that. There's stories of mythological proportions that are unfolding this very second, and they happened not only around the world, but they've happened right here in the city of Atlanta. So I want to talk about a couple of those in my talk today. One of the myths that has unfolded for thousands of years is the story of the hero within. What is the hero's journey? What is it that's the hero? And just this week, we've seen heroes step forward for the sake of humanity. The stories of the Americans stepping forward on the train in Amsterdam. The story of the women graduating from ranger training. And then there was a story that not too many people heard about, but it was a heroic journey that happened right here at Morehouse College. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. All of these stories are stories of greatness, and we think they are stories of people who we think of as heroes, of being out there, that those men had special this and special that, those women had special this and special that, people who have superpowers or people who may have lived privileged lives, and then they step out on that privilege, so therefore they look like a hero. But the truth of the matter is all of these heroes are people just like you and me. And the truth of the matter is, every single one of us sitting in here this morning is a hero. There's a hero within you right this very minute. There's the author Otto Rank, who wrote a book, The Myth of a Birth of a Hero, who declares that everyone is a hero in birth. There's a couple of things that you need to overcome to be a hero. What had to happen for you to be born was a tremendous psychological as well as a physical transformation. Those two things needed to happen. From the condition of a little water creature living in the realm of amniotic fluid into this air-breathing mammal, which eventually is going to stand up. So just that birth alone is an enormous transformation. If you had to undertake that consciously, you may not have taken that step. If you consciously had to take that step from being safe and warm and everything here over to that step of being standing mammal, you would stay right here. So we don't take that consciously. So something subconscious within you, something subconscious within your mother, for if your mother would have had to make the conscious choice of all that pain, would she jump that chasm? Not at all. She wouldn't take the jump. So it's something that needs to happen at a bigger level than our conscious mind. So here's a little bit of hint about the hero within you. We think heroes are all made because of the conscious decisions, and some of them are made that way. And even like the heroes on the train this week, they did have to make a conscious decision to act, but before their conscious decision was made, an unconscious aspect of them had to act in split seconds. An unconscious aspect of them calculated the risk, it calculated their courage, it calculated their maneuvers way before their conscious mind said to act. The subconscious mind did all of that. It's that aspect of you that is the subconscious making those calculations that is the hero within every single one of us. We didn't know we made all those decisions. Those decisions are within us already. It's available to every single one of us. You're a hero right now. But we don't build our lives about making ourselves heroes. We build our lives about being safe and secure and in our comfort zone. And I always get up here and I say, if you step outside of your comfort zone, that's where I want you to live. That's where I want you to live. That's where life is fulfilling you and pushing you forward outside that comfort zone. But when we set up a comfort zone, there's no chance to be a hero or anything like that because we just want to stay right here. So what I want to talk with you this morning about is that hero's journey. There's three aspects of that hero's journey. There's living in the world, there's coming into awareness, and living in the sacred. The living in the world part is how we grow up. We're taught about survival and living in the world, not only physically, but socially. We're taught about power. We observe people with power. We want to get that power. We learn how to obtain that power ourselves. Here's where we learn about money living in this world, why we're attracted to the people we're attracted to. We learn about the patterns of aging, of death and marriage and war and ritual. We learn all of that there. It's where we start to see what we're good at and maybe where we're not so good at. So we all pull together, living in this world, certain aspects of ourselves that we think are great aspects and attributes of ourselves, and we try to fit ourselves into a box that maybe we're not supposed to be fitting ourselves into. Now, my brother was a true athlete. He's a quarterback for the neighborhood leagues and everything like that, and he was a fast runner and the quarterback and everything, and I'm the younger brother, and I was like, I want to be just like him. I want to be just like that. And the thing is this is what my feet look like. Maybe two left feet or something along those lines. I wasn't as coordinated as he was. I couldn't be just like him. So I still wanted to be on the football team. So I was a big kid, so I'm the center for the football team and just didn't get all the accolades that he was getting in there. However, something within me was something better, and that was excelling in school. I loved school as a kid. I couldn't wait to go. I was one of those kids that I loved that I had a perfect attendance record. I just loved going to school. So living in this world portion of my life that I was seeing that I was good at, I learned from myself, not the world around me, what was more natural for me. I learned that I loved the academics. That was more natural for me, not the physical training. So when you grew up, you should have been more inclined to your inner calling, even though society was telling you to go one way or the other. Your parents and your family were trying to tell you to go one way or the other. But something within you said, this is who I am. And so what was the aspect of you that was saying that? And I want to say it was your hero self. Your hero self. Your hero self was saying that while you were living in the world. The next step is coming into awareness. This is the second step of the hero's journey. This is where we open up to this subconscious aspect of ourselves and understand it's not just the conscious thing, it's the subconscious aspect. This is where we open ourselves up to this deep love and truths of the world. We start to see our true self and we start loving our true self. I was trying to love myself as that football player and everything like that, but I could not love that as much as I could love my true self, which was that natural person that was able to go into the academics. So we start to love ourselves. We move towards our own bliss, our own resonance with spirit, our own resonance with the hero that's been within us all the time. In this stage, we start moving into this higher level of enthusiasm. Enthusiasm comes from the root and theos, which means God-filled. God-filled. When you have that enthusiasm, you're God-filled. Here we start moving into that place that fulfills us by not looking so much out there for the world's acceptance, but we're looking more in here and understanding I'm good at the academics. That's where I'm good at. This is a place where time is not there when you start understanding that good feeling. Time's not there. And when we fill ourselves with that aspect of ourselves, then we change the world around us, not by fixing all those things out there, but being who we are in here, really aligning with our hero self. It is from this place that we love without effort. Love without effort is hard to do in living in the world stage, that first stage I talked about. So we sit here and say, I need to love my boss. We need to love our neighbors. We need to love our lives. We say that all the time. But then sometimes it's not so hard in that living in the world aspect to love all those people. So I remember being in the law firm where I've been at for a few years and was dealing with some very difficult people. And the head of the firm who comes to this center says, David, wrap them in Jesus and your experience will be different. Wrap them in Jesus. You don't know these people. Wrap them in Jesus. So I said, okay, she's trying to tell me to move up from living in this world up to this awareness, this better awareness. Wrap them in Jesus. Mainly she was just saying, you know, wrap them in love. Wrap them in love. So I go to the meeting like this. Wrap them in Jesus. Wrap them in Jesus. Wrap them in love. Grinding my teeth. It was this conscious way of me showing up. I still hadn't gone to the subconscious mind of loving those people. It was the conscious aspect of me that was saying I needed to love those people. But when you're coming into this coming into awareness stage, it's not conscious. It's automatic. You love those people automatically. This is where Kennedy Schultz, the founder of religious science in the Atlanta area, taught us that were there at the time. Everyone loves me whether they know it or not. Everyone loves me whether they know it or not. So when I walk into a meeting like that, everyone loves me whether they know it or not. You have a different action occurs in that meeting when you walk in with that type of attitude. You love automatically. It has nothing to do with the world at the conscious level where love is, where there's duality and there's love and hate. But at the subconscious level, where there is no time, where there is no duality, everyone loves at that level. And everyone loves me whether they know it or not. So here at this level of coming into awareness, we evolved to that place where the energy had used to be projected outward to correct the world. It's now turned inward to correct ourselves. That's where the energy starts turning. This is when you're at a spiritual level enough to take a Ho'oponopono class. I'm not going to go into Ho'oponopono, but when you get spiritual enough up at this coming into awareness stage, it is there where you realize it has nothing to do with the people that show up in your life, the circumstances that show up in your life. It has everything to do within here. And so one of the exercises you do in a Ho'oponopono class is clean erase, clean erase. If something out here shows up in your world that you're not liking, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do that your lens is dirty and muddied. And you need to clean, erase, and get a better lens of what it is that you're looking at. So how do we start looking at ourselves on the inside? We start doing that. And when something like that happens, we start getting on our own track. And we dance. And the dance is the balance between those two worlds. It's the world of living in the world and also, too, of coming into that awakening, that awareness. You dance between the two of them. I come and I understand that I am loving all the time, no matter what, and I step into that circumstance with what's going on out there in my world. So from that level is when we finally move to this final level of living in the sacred. Living in the sacred. This is where we see that we can choose to lift the veil of illusion called Maya. It has nothing to do with all of this that's going on out there. Lift the veil of the Maya to reveal the real kingdom that we're living in. It is then that the rhythm of the spheres moves through us. The power of the universe is at our back. The universal heartbeat is our own. It's not just me individually with my own heartbeat. When I feel this heartbeat, that's not David's heartbeat. That is truly the heartbeat of the universe. And I'm very clear about that. So all of these three stages are summed up in this old saying. You'll like this. You've heard it many times before. Before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. What this means is living in the world. This is what we did. We chopped wood, carried water. I thought it was sports, but it was really academics. Then I was enlightened, not just going to college and even more college, but finally coming to the realization that my life was not all about the conscious world, but there was the subconscious understanding of thinking, a subconscious aspect of me that was saying there's a better way, there's an easier way. And in Matthew, that's where it says, that is where the yoke is easy and the burden is light. That's when we recognize that. And then once I come into that awareness, am I supposed to go sit on a mountaintop in Om? When we come into that level of living in the sacred, is that all that you do is go sit on the mountaintop and Om, waiting for people to come and ask me the meaning of life? Om. No. What I do, I chop wood and carry water. I do the things I academically want to do. I read spiritual books. I read theological books. I read books where I see science and religion coming together just like this. Even yesterday, I went to the gym. I run into Paul there. I was so excited to see Paul. I didn't see him yesterday at the gym. And I wore my Higgs boson t-shirt. I was all excited about my Higgs boson. It doesn't say anything. It has this picture of the atom and how it explodes and the energy that's in the center of it and things like that. And I was like, oh, I'm so excited. Somebody's going to recognize this. No one came up to me or said anything about this t-shirt that I was wearing. My conscious side said, wear it. My subconscious side did not need a single person to acknowledge it. That's me. That's the David Goober aspect of me that I love this teaching, and I want you to see where it even comes from, the Higgs boson. This is the dance between the two worlds. I'm willing to go ahead and wear my Higgs boson t-shirt and go to the gym and work out in the living in the world aspect, but at the same time coming back and understanding a greater awareness. So we have these three stages of the hero's journey. So I want to use the Americans on the trains this week as an example, because this is true mythological hero stories unfolding right before our eyes this week. They were living in the world. They had societal conformity happening to them. They had parental conformity happening to them. But somewhere along the line, both of them said, the military life is for me. One was with the Air Force, the other was with the National Guard. Not everyone has a part of themselves that will allow the military ever to be associated with them. So they allowed that unique aspect of themselves to come through when they were living in this world. They learned about power. They learned about survival. And they had all of that learning in their conscious mind. But as they were sitting on that train this past week, did the next level occur? They came into awareness. It was not their conscious mind that had them act. Their subconscious mind was acting way before their conscious mind. The aspect of mind that did not have time there. We've all been in circumstances where something was going really bad and it seemed like everything was slow motion. That's when we're moving into this next level of understanding. It just seemed like it was happening in slow motion. For these gentlemen, it was happening in slow motion. So they were moving into this realm that there was no time. The aspect of their mind did not have defeat. That wasn't even a question that came up in their mind. They were in their subconscious mind level. It was the aspect of their mind that only had courage to act. That is what they were living in that area. All of that acted before their conscious mind came into action. So when they combine those two, what they love, their unique aspect of themselves growing up and deciding finally the military was for them, and the hero self that was there all the time, what they and we are born with. When those two came together, the subconscious aspect of us that is tied to the rhythm of the spheres and the heartbeat of the universe came into play. Supernatural powers and an heroic act unfolded. Some even say when you read more of Joseph Campbell in the Power of Myth book, he says sometimes when people are learning the things that they're learning and everything like that, the law of attraction is happening, that you're even attracting the circumstances that are going to make you have the heroic act. So I'm not going to go into too much detail on that this morning, but that's a really interesting point of view of maybe you brought that into your life and having that heroic act. So those guys had a huge heroic act last week. Where do they go from here? Where do they go for here? Guess what? Chop wood, carry water. But at a different level. They move into what it is what they were doing, their paths that they chose as individuals, but with an understanding of themselves that they can do more than just what they're consciously aware of. More than what they're consciously aware of. And this is the point I want to share with each of us today. You can do more than what you're consciously aware of. You can love more than you think you can love. On your conscious level of loving, like mine, grinding my teeth, going, you know, wrap them in Jesus, wrap them in love and grinding my teeth, that's the conscious aspect of me that was trying to love. But when you go to that aspect of you that loves without condition and show up into that circumstance that you need to show up in, something magnificent happens. And I've had many a classes where we talked about this and how we need to love beyond our thinking aspect of love and go to a deeper understanding of love. And I have seen parents talk to children that they haven't talked to in 20 years. I have seen a lot of things happen when you turn into this different aspect, this hero aspect of love that you have within you. And you know what? You can do a better job at your job than you think you can. In your conscious mind, you have this great understanding of what it is your job, but if you chime in to the creativity of the universe within you, you can move that to magical proportions by coming up with the ideas. And the other thing is you're richer than you consciously think you are. Consciously, you want to count all your dollars, but you know what? You are rich, rich, rich right now. Stop counting the dollars. The dollars is on the conscious level. So when you go to the hero level of what how rich you are rich without comparison. And you're healthier than you consciously think you are. Do you know every single one of the cells of your body is sitting here saying, I align myself with the universe? Every single cell is. But also, too, our conscious mind is sitting there saying, oh, but my parents had this, and I've inherited that, and don't you know the flu is going around, and don't you know all this? And you're putting all that out there. The rest of the universe inside of you is trying to say, David, you are perfect, whole, and complete. So we have to pull into that hero aspect of us that knows that. And how do you move to that higher awareness? You take the heroic journey. You go from living in the world to coming into awareness to living in the sacred. Joseph Campbell in the myth class says that when he was speaking about this with his journey, he was a really young kid when he was attracted to myth, and he read a lot of Westerns and about American Indian traditions and rituals and everything like that. And he came across this American Indian saying that I shared with you at the beginning of this. A bit of advice given to a young Native American at the time of his initiation: as you go the way of life, you will see a great chasm. Jump. It's not as wide as you think. I love this. If you see a great chasm, jump. It's not as wide as you think. Many of us think the chasm between living this conscious life and allowing any of this subconscious aspect of us to come through is a great chasm. Great chasm. We don't like that space. For some of us, it's actually miles. For me, when I came in here, it was actually miles before I did that. Marilyn did a great opening and sat there and said that you have to understand the creative process of the law and you have to believe the creative process of the law for that to happen in your life. So I was miles from understanding that that's how the law works in my life until I take another class and come to another Sunday and take another class. We don't like that space, but that's the ego within us speaking. That is the learned aspect of us that we learn during the first stage of living in the world. We also unlearn to listen to the subconscious mind that was trying to come through when we were kids. But what did our parents say? Don't listen to that inner voice. Don't listen to that. What did our teacher say? Don't listen to that. What did the rabbi and the minister say? Don't listen to that. Don't listen to that. And somewhere during all that crushing of all of that, there's a still small voice saying, more, more, more. That is when we're standing on the edge of the chasm, and all of our learned say it is wise, but it is not as wide as you think. That is when we lift the veil of illusion of Maya and realize we have been the ones creating the Maya all along. We have been creating those illusions all along. So this week in Atlanta, Georgia at Morehouse College, 679 men jumped that chasm. This past week, a ritual of mythological proportions occurred at Morehouse, and it's called the Parents' Parting Ceremony. It was the beginning of a new four-year semester for the freshmen, and the parents were invited to send them off on their heroic journey of 4 years of college. So up to this point, all of these men have been living in the world. They came from their families and all of that. They were gathering race consciousness. But something within them said, more, more, more. They could have gone to any college they wanted to within the country, but they chose Morehouse. They chose Morehouse. There was a meaning and a purpose for these men who could have chosen any other college. They are coming into an awareness, what just happened this week. They know what it means to be a Morehouse man. And a Morehouse man, this is a noun. This is a noun. A Morehouse man is someone like Howard Thurman, a Morehouse graduate that was a theologian and a civil rights advocate. Others who became Morehouse men include Martin Luther King Jr., Julian Bond, Spike Lee. Other scholars, scientists, ministers, politicians, executives are all Morehouse men. So the chasm is wide for an 18-year-old to even think that I could step into shoes like that. But here they were jumping this past week. And there was a ritual of mythological proportion that recently started about parents' parting ceremony. Campbell said this even happened in the American Indian tribes when it was time for the teenage kids to go out and become men, the teenage boys to become men, that they would have this big dance the night before and lots of food, and the tribe would get together before sending the teens off to conquer and sending them off to become from boys to men. They had to go out and kill, and they had to bring back and show everything that they have grown up. And this is what happened at Morehouse. The parents parting from their boys, who they know in a four-year period will become men. And just not any man, but a Morehouse man. What happens at the ritual is that there's this Thurman chest, and it's brought from Dean Carter's office. And for those of you who don't know Dean Carter, I want you to make it a point to go meet Dean Carter. Dean Carter is a very good friend of this center, and every now and then on Sunday, he'll sneak in the back door, and he'll sit in the back rows back here. You won't even know he's here, and then he sneaks out as quick as he snuck in. So he's a very good friend of our center. But the Thurman chest that sits in his office was a chest that Howard Thurman himself bought when he was in India in 1936. Howard Thurman in 1936, he journeyed there to learn the concepts of nonviolent resistance and civil disobedience directly from Gandhi. That's what he did. In 1981, upon his death, his wife Sue placed his ashes in this chest, the Thurman chest. But then in 1996, when she passed, his ashes were taken out of that chest, and both sets of ashes were interred at a monument just outside the campus's chapel. This Thurman chest was the centerpiece of this last week parents' parting ceremony. It was placed at the entrance of the chapel so that when the 679 incoming freshmen and their families came in, they would pass by this Thurman's chest. It was the fathers and the mothers that paused at the chest, and they dropped in a card or two. They each penned their hopes for their sons at this all-male school. One father wrote that his son, Christian, would not be afraid to be himself. Another mother wished that her son Sebastian would fulfill his dreams. Another couple was not going to stay for the ceremony. They needed to get back to Chicago. They didn't have the time to stay there. And when the provost at the school heard this, they said, you know what? We will call your bosses. We will pay you the time lost. We will pay for you to change your flights. We want you to be at this parent parting ceremony. They were able to write their visions for their son. Their vision, to feel a sense of brotherhood, to have a spirit of service, to become a whole person. Then after all the parents put their notes in the Thurman chest and found their seats, three African drummers came in, passed the chest, and escorted all 679 freshmen into the auditorium. The mother, who was not going to be there to go, when she said she had to go to Chicago, this is what she said. It was one thing to be told about this experience. It was another to experience it firsthand. She continued, I felt like I was walking into the past, into an ancestor vibe. I've had a wonderful life as a woman, but this was the first time I'd ever been jealous of one of my sons. This is what ritual does to society. This is what myth does. The myth of send off our teens for a huge stage of growth is not just the conscious awareness of the ceremony, but something within that goes to our ancestors knows what's going on. This ceremony that they had over at Morehouse is a mix of African music and dance, Christian preaching, and a specific homage to Dr. Thurman's liberation ideology. There was a professor from New York Theological Seminary that witnessed this, and she says all of this add up to what's called the Morehouse Gospel. And that is a belief system characterized by a prophetic mystical vision, a focus on racial justice, and a commitment to nonviolent love. I love that quote, because that's exactly what we're talking about, that dance between living in the world and then also coming up into this awakening, into this awareness. For this theologian is talking about the dance between those two, the dance between race, where we see that in the living in the world and coming into the sacred, there is no race. So that's when she talked about also, too, about this nonviolent love. That's when you don't have to grit your teeth and say, I love that person. When you come into nonviolent love, there's a whole different level. So it was truly, this is what the Morehouse Gospel is living in both of those worlds, living in both of those worlds. It was Dr. Thurman who set into motion this chain of reaction that would imbue Dr. Martin Luther King with the Gandhi principles. Thurman, in 1936, he came back from Gandhi, and he introduced these precepts to Benjamin E. Mays. He was then the Morehouse president. Dr. Mays talked about the Indian leader's soul force ethos. The soul force. It's not just what we can do with our mind, but when you connect with the universal, something great happens. So Dr. Mays taught about this soul force before a student body that included Martin Luther King. It was Dr. Thurman that taught about the historical Jesus, a Jew under the Roman boot, rather than the supernatural resurrected Jesus. There's a difference between those two, the Jew under the Roman boot, rather than the supernatural resurrected Jesus. Another student who encountered Dr. Thurman was a minister, a doctoral candidate up in Boston. His name was Lawrence E. Carter, Jr. Dean Carter, meeting Howard Thurman. Carter asked Thurman for advice, and Thurman said, walk among the 100 crimson hills of Atlanta, listening to the voice. And then I want you to become the voice. Walk among the 100 crimson hills of Atlanta, listening to the voice. And then I want you to become the voice. So this is the call. This is a hero. Listen to the voice of 100 crimson hills. Here he's saying, stop listening to what the world says and listen for something much louder. Something louder. That ceremony continues, and it was a 2014 graduate of Morehouse that's now up at Harvard Divinity School, and he led the students in the reciprocal pledges that they gave back and forth. The parents affirmed their love and acknowledged the importance of letting go of their sons, and the students thanked their elders for their support and vowed to honor their family name. Reverend Winfred Rice, that 2014 graduate, then invoked the words from the more mystical side of Dr. Thurman, and he said this, and this is pure religious science. He said, do not ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive. And go do it. For what the world needs is people who have come alive. What the world needs is for people who have come alive. And when you come alive, the world will get what it needs. If you come alive. At the end of the ceremony, the parents that were to have not been there, the ones that had to leave to Chicago, they were the ones that got to carry the Thurman box out. And they put it in the memorial crypt with Thurman for the night. And it was kept there overnight. All of those hopes and dreams that the parents had written down was kept there. The next morning, the Thurman box was retrieved. All the notes were placed in another box to be opened on May 19th, 2019. Dr. Carter then takes that Thurman chest it's back in his office until next year when those next Morehouse men show up. This is the meaning of ritual. This is the power of myth. These students were living in the world up to this point. They came before a chasm and they jumped. Now they are coming into awareness. They have these 4 years. And even before they graduate, they're going to be living in the sacred. For we are now living in the sacred right now. We just don't know it. We are all heroes right now. We just don't know it. So this is what that power of myth class is going to be about, moving through these three stages. This is what the center is all about, awakening humanity to its spiritual magnificence. So I loved watching Donald Trump this week. But some things, you know me, everything's religious science. I see something, oh, that's religious science. Oh, that's religious science. And what he was talking about is all the other rambling, but what he was talking about was he was in the same town that Jeb Bush was at, and he was on the other side of town. And they were like, well, what do you think about Jeb Bush on the other side of town? And he said, they're sleeping. They're sleeping. That's all he said. And I was like, that's religious science. When you understand the rest of the world is out there and just sleeping, what is it that's going to make you come alive? I want to be alive. So what is it that makes you come alive? When you come to a teaching such as this, we become awake. We become alive. We do learn that it is just not the conscious aspect of our being, but we have this whole spiritual aspect of ourselves that's lying in wait, waiting for us to come into awareness to be alive. It's asking us to jump. For it is there that we all are the heroes right now. It is there, there, there is the waking of the individuals and the knowledge of themselves, not simply as egos fighting for place on the surface of this beautiful planet, but living equally as centers of mind at large. That's what we are. That should make us absolutely excited to be alive and awake. And it is living there that it is wonderful, and so are you, and so it is. So each one of us takes this hero journey and we understand this together. We come together in mind and understand that, yes, the orbs of the universe are all circulating beautifully, wonderfully, all just for us. And we're an aspect all of that universal circulation. We're an aspect of the universal power. We're an aspect of that universal life. We're an aspect of every single part of that. And it is on this day that we come together and announce that each one of us is a hero to step forward more than consciously what we're aware of. If we only took into what we're consciously aware of, we will make less than greater decisions. We will make less than greater understanding about our love that we have and our bodies that we have and our careers and the amount of money that we have. But when we step into the greater, when we let go of just the conscious aspect of our being and chime into that subconscious aspect, that's when the hero shows up. That's when life changes. That's when our physical bodies change as well, because we start walking in a different way than we've ever walked before. That's the truth about every single one of us. That hero is within us. And so we take this hero's journey. We move through living into the world to becoming aware, to living in the sacred, and understanding that we don't have to do a whole lot more different than what we've been doing now, but just do it in this greater understanding of consciousness. Both the conscious mind and the subconscious mind working together. There we can move mountains. There we can love greater than we've loved before. There the yoke is easy and the burden is light. We let go of the small ideas about ourselves or what other people say that we need to be doing, because that's not the truth about ourselves. The truth about ourselves is that there's a hero within. It's there right now. And that hero knows that when we come to a chasm, we jump. Because it's just not us consciously making that jump. Subconsciously, there's an aspect of us that's going to help us with it. We give great thanks for this understanding, and we release this word to law, knowing that as when we walk out of these doors right now, the hero within is there to meet any circumstance that comes before us.